Welcome to the 8th episode of Haunted Hills Podcast. I'm your host, Tegan Dawson. In this episode, I share the history of Traralgon. As with all good historical tales, you might meet the butcher, the baker and candlestick maker, a nurse, rail worker and bootmaker. I like to focus on the people, because the town creates commonality between the people, building relationships through the need for products, services and industry. The people make the town. Traralgon started as a roadside hamlet. Many of these types of towns don't exist today. So what separated Traralgon from the rest? The creation with energy, perseverance and bravery? A prosperous, planned out town, while it's not a garden city design, there are many green spaces in Traralgon, even though they cleared it entirely of the original fauna and flora, diversifying it for their service sector to meet the needs of farmers. These people wanted to dwell in the village while having some flexibility to respond to the changing times around them. The train line helped them obtain supplies, assisting in the growth of the town after 1879. This area started as a run, more accurately four runs, that meet about the location of Traralgon. Anyway, I like to focus on the people, because people make the place. In 1896, Franklin Street burned. Okay, so I said I wanted to tell you about people, and I do. This issue impacted so many people. First, let me set the scene. It was 8 p.m. on 8 March 1896. A child on their way to bed in the rooms above Price's Butchers knocked over a candle. The curtains went up. Unfortunately, with a stiff breeze and low water pressure, the gallant efforts of the fire brigade were hampered. By 9:30 p.m., an entire block was lost. Eventually, they got the fire under control. All the shops were wooden, except for one built in brick. Few of the people living here were insured, destroying 9 properties. The town rallied together in the coming days with 100 volunteers to help remove the rubble. Let's meet these families, business people who lived in the back or top of their shops. Mr. Hewitt was uninsured when the flames took his saddlery and home. His property was one of the last for the fire to reach. It was on the corner of Franklin and Seymour Street. The gathered community helped him save a lot of high-quality hides, thankfully, because they were not insured. Residents started a fund for the uninsured. As a saddler, he had horses and conducted harness racing. 4 years before this disaster on Franklin Street, he, along with two friends, Rogers and McFarlane, were returning by buggy from a shooting trip when the carriage overturned. Falling 5 feet off the road, they were thrown from the carriage. Thankfully, they were relatively unharmed. As with all good Traralgon citizens, Traralgonites if you will, they were deeply involved in the Traralgon Agricultural Society, which held an annual show. In 1890, William entered his plough, saddle and collection of saddlery along with 1,700 other entrants of all categories. He was awarded first prize for his entries. It was a great event, which included the attendance of the Governor John Adrian Lewis Hope, the Earl of Hopetoun, and his wife. The agricultural show was a standing annual society event. Locals attended en masse. The year after the fire, 1897, Mr. Hewitt was still in the area and was a judge in the local Traralgon Sports Day. Along with many other local business owners, he provided prizes for the ploughing contest in Glengarry. Mr. William Hewitt was part of the Mounted Constables. They say until his body grew too heavy for his nag. So then he created, in 1900, the Rifle Club, which 30 members instantly elected him the captain. Upon his appointment, he looked at revamping the disbanded mounted rifle range the police used with no accidents. It was on private land. However, the regulations had changed. The secretary of the Rifle Association made 6 amendments, then said it would be fine to proceed. The National Council for Rifle Associations were part of the defence strategy for Australia. While the military hoped to gain control or oversight of the clubs, some clubs were not happy with this direction and resisted. The military and rifle clubs had different definitions of how to secure Australia. Card-carrying members of the rifle clubs could carry their rifles openly through the town. They had declared an oath of allegiance to abide by protecting the town. Mr. Hewitt was involved and interested in local politics. In 1889, he nominated Mr. Breed for his candidacy in the central riding seat in the Traralgon Shire. During 1902, there was a massive drought in the Traralgon district, which caused the stock to starve. There was an open forum to discuss the issue. He offered a solution. To create a fund to help pay for pasturage if it could not be obtained for free. By 1918, he had left the district. However, the social event of the season called him back home, the Traralgon Agricultural Society annual show. He bid on the last auction item for the night to support the local community. He would have caught up with his friends and the changes of the town and had a great time. Traralgon history, the bootmaker. In 1896, Patrick Ralph Kinner, the bootmaker, and his family of 3 and a half, I can't find the month and day that their 5th child, Doris, was born. She was either a freshly baked baby or Annie was still pregnant with her at the time the fire destroyed their home and uninsured shoe shop. Watching the low volume water stream drip over the fire would have raised their stress levels as the water pooled at their feet. Patrick was able to save 2 sewing machines. By the time the fire occurred, they lived in Traralgon for at least 8 years. In November of this year, he provided the music for the Traralgon Agricultural Society, leading the band, bringing happiness to the event, which began to overcome the oppressive heat that day. Patrick Ralph Kinner was born in Tarraville, Victoria, to Patrick, 31, and Bridget, 34, on the 11th of May, 1861. While he was 3 years old, his father started buying land, 2 allotments in Bairnsdale for £22 sterling, the British coin, in installments. By 22 October, 1864, the final £3 were paid sometime after this. However, he never received a transfer of property paperwork from Doherty. In 1867, the sheriff wrote a writ between Doherty and Kinner and sold the land at public auction, to Kinner for £25. If we're keeping track, Kinner has paid £50 for the same property. In 1869, Patrick Kinner wanted to exercise his rights as property owner to evict someone from his land, only to discover he did not own it because the title deed was not properly registered. In 1870, William Doherty said Kinner had only paid £22 for the land, which is worth £37. This is 6 years later. The judge may have directed the men to deal with this outside of the court. Pat likely heard this story from his older brother, Austin, because their father died when Patrick was 11 years old. Austin likely trained Pat as a shoemaker. Because their father had showed him the trade. Austin was Bairnstow's bootmaker for many years. In 1883, Patrick married Annie Bradshaw. They became active community members. Patrick Ralph conducted the Traralgon Brass Band for many years, from as early as 1888, and even after the disaster at his store. He leads the band for a Traralgon Sports Day and played many songs. Pat was generous in the community to support the 1918 Traralgon Red Cross effort with gifts and goods donated. He trained his son Walter in bootmaking as well. Walter moved to service the Stratford and Maffra area once he was proficient in the trade. His son too was interested in the band and orchestra. Doris took on his love of music as well, playing the piano. Ada completed her grade 6 examination in piano under Miss Nelson's teacher in 1914. Pat took debts seriously and dealt with them in court quickly. In 1908, his mother was placed in the Q Asylum, labelled as insane. The prognosis listed as bad. She'd experienced 2 seizures and was considered dangerous to herself and others. Her diagnosis was senile dementia. Patrick and his sister Margaret were both listed as next of kin on her admission form, doing the best for her that they was available to them. She passed away there in 1909. Maybe she always had mental health issues, as earlier in her life, his mother, in 1869, called Constable a wretch while drunk, resulting in her arrest. Consequently, Patrick was placed in foster care for a night, while she was imprisoned for the same period. Miss Tanner was a dressmaker who'd insured her furniture in stock. She was renting the building from Mr. McFarlane. After the fire, she moved to work from home in Seymour Street. In 1893, Miss Tanner attended a wedding of her friends. She wore a grey dress with a bonnet trimmed in green to match. She accessorized with a silver body comb, sugar scuttle, and scoop. In 1900, she decided to leave Traralgon, selling all her household items from her residence in Seymour Street. 2 double beds and bedding, 2 washstands, 2 sets of bedroomware, 2 sewing machines in good order, saucepans, border tubs, crockery, blinds, pictures, and also a lot of ladies' new dresses and underclothing, and a pair of prize Plymouth rock fowls, and a quarter acre of land in K Street. I wish I could find out more about this dressmaker. However, due to not knowing how old she is, she could be the sister of 3 men I found, or their daughter. Mrs. Barden ran the local curtain shop. Her shop too was destroyed. She lost the most of all her fellow storekeepers. Her stock was worth £1,600 and only insured for £250. Mrs. Barden's shop was presented beautifully, like an arcade, the year before the fire, for the Christmas festival. She also donated prizes to the Trogon show. And during that Christmas, she'd also had Mr. Ritchie play in her store. Unfortunately, this was not the only challenge her business faced. She'd been in a business relationship with another person who declared bankruptcy. Mr. Hales was the baker who was insured for £230. His building was south of Price's Butchers, where the fire started. He saved his organ. Some furniture, but 50 bags of flour were lost. Mr. Hales contributed significantly to the town. There was a Hales Cup for the cricket. Which may have been donated by the baker. He also catered local events with cakes and fruit. The Trogon Produce Market. Bain and McDonald's were the owners of the local produce market, which was uninsured and lost in this fire. Mr. Bain left the area in 1888. The townspeople were sad to see him go, because he was always willing to help advance Trogon. Although they were sure he would be successful wherever his travels took him. So while the fire started in the rooms above Price's shop, he did not have children of his own. Let's meet him. John James Price, Jim to his friends. More commonly, he went by the name James. He was the second son born to Thomas and Margaret in Sale, 1866. The boys were the three oldest children and his sisters were the youngest. Ironically, in 1889, he was the fire hose warden for the local fire brigade. He was also awarded a slaughterhouse license this year. In 1892, he won 7 first prizes in the poultry division for the Trogon show. He may have entered more chickens, however, they were not winners. He opened a butcher shop which burned down in 1896. He was sharing the house with his larger family. James was not married, however, Mrs. Price rushed into Franklin Street, a child perched on her hip. She was holding the hand of another. In the wake of the fire, the community came together. However, a crucial part of the town was the railway station master and men employed by the railroads. Maybe this inspired Jim's career change as he began working on the railway after this. Jim was an active member of the Trogon Society. From donating gifts and supporting benevolent drives, he also attended an anti-subscription meeting. He was a member of the Trogon Jockey Club, completing many roles there, but even deciding the handicaps for one of the races to determine the better horse who would carry the more substantial weight and how much that would be disadvantaged when it was racing against slower horses. James's father was the general manager of the gas pipe works in Trogon. Every morning, as James grew older, he took an aspirin, put his hat on, then got out of bed to greet the day. He died in 1957. Charles Harold Welch was born in 1884, Ballarat, the fifth child of Charles Andrew and Elizabeth Welch, who joined his three older siblings, more commonly known as Harold. While living in Ballarat, his father was the licensee of the Ballarat Baths. And created the Gold Trowel Pro Cathedral in Ballarat for the laying of the foundation stone. He was a tiler of the Freemasons. The tiler is the keeper of the inn door because this was the original meeting place of Freemasons. Harold's father apprenticed him in the craft and trade as himself. They'd just moved to Trogon to a property in Franklin Street in 1895. Unfortunately, this was the area affected by the terrible fire in 1896. He was 12 years old. They were living at the epicenter of the disaster. So it was either one of the Price children or Welsh children that accidentally knocked the candle onto the curtain. In 1911, Charles Harold returned to Ballarat to marry Hilda Coldell. They returned to Trelgan together. Shortly after they were married, Mervyn Harold Welch was born in 1912. In September 1913, Hilda became ill and confined to bed at Nurse Miller's. The local doctors, McLean and Hagnall, sought a surgeon from Melbourne, Dr. Seaton. Hilda regained consciousness. However, she did not recover from the surgery. The people of Trelgan were sad to hear this, as she had quickly adapted to the Trelgan community and was a respected member. The epitaph on her burial says, "In midst of life, we are in death." Hilda was buried at the Trelgan Cemetery. In 1915, Harold was advertising. It read, "The leading local jeweller is now showing the latest designs in jewellery made in Australia by skilled workmen. Before you purchase elsewhere, you should inspect these goods and compare the prices. Aquamarine necklets, pearl pendants, double bar and crescent brooches. Diamond engagement rings a specialty. Guarantee for 2 years. Old jewellery made new. Watches and clocks cleaned and repaired. All work is done on premises." Harold married Annie Christina McCallum in Melbourne in September 1917. Her sister was a bridesmaid. The couple then drove home to Trelgan. Muriel Christina was born 5 years later. Harold's parents celebrated their golden wedding anniversary in 1925. However, due to his mum's poor health, they couldn't have a party. 3 years later, his father passed away. In 1932, another fire devastated his shop. The insurance would not cover his losses. However, thankfully, he was not living in the same building as the shop by this time. It started in Mr. White's paint shop. Unfortunately, the same year, he also lost his mother. Annie, his wife, passed away in 1938. In 1940, Harold married for the third time to Nellie, known as Floss Turnbull. It was a smaller affair. They were both in their 50s. They likely saw Queen Elizabeth visit Trelgan in 1954 and heard her say their town was beautiful. The Welches were being filled with pride as they had contributed to this town and development for many years. On 4 September 1955, Nellie suddenly died. Harold still had faith, and the epithet read, "In God's care." He was a lifelong member of the St. James Church of England. For many years, he was a member of the town band and president, a singer and organizer. He wanted the Lyric Club to add an opera section. He sang "What a Nasty Feeling" and "The Baby's Name." Isabella Miller was born in 1865 at Hamilton, Victoria, to David Miller, 25, and Lilias, 21, who the year before had lost a baby they named William Miller. Unfortunately, her father died when she was 3 years old. The same year, her brother David Miller was born. Lilias raised Isabella and David on her own until she remarried in 1875. The groom was John Labatt, a man of many trades, baking, grooming, farming, and working as a coach driver. In 1875, he'd been married 3 times before. This relationship brought Isabella 6 half-siblings and 7 step-siblings. Maybe her father's death made her want to learn how to heal people. She was a trim brunette who wore her hair up in a bun below a small brimmed hat with the Red Cross symbol at the front. She travelled on a bike in a full-length dress with a belt around her waist, a timepiece attached to her breast from under a collar. A leather bag attached to the handlebars held her medical supplies. She trained as a nurse and had practiced for 12 years before opening what is known as Nurse Miller's Private Hospital in Trelgan around 1909. Initially, she advertised for general midwifery services. The hospital was painted white, a weatherboard home with a white picket fence. The roof is iron sheeting, and two chimneys rise on both sides. There are chairs on the front porch, two people are sitting, and she stands on the porch in a long white apron over a light-coloured dress. Two front windows, one is open, someone is sitting in the window, the other is closed with a lovely curtain. Numerous doctors treated their patients from her hospital, while she provided nursing care, which consistently received high praise and gratitude from the locals, even after tragedies. There are many cases of nursing broken arms, other trauma injuries, food poisoning cases. Unfortunately, in 1916, the food poisoning case, she was unable to control the bacteria because there were no antibiotics until 1928, the first being penicillin. Isabella was conscious of providing the best environment for her hospital. She worked closely with the local council and gasworks to improve the heating and increase the lighting. She was also a socially conscious woman and committed to healthcare. In 1916, she donated 3 shillings to the French Red Cross. In 1923, a fire started in the hospital's washhouse. Thankfully, Isabella put it out herself with buckets before the brigade arrived, causing very little damage. She was a very competent woman who was able to deal effectively with her nursing duties and the management of the hospital to protect it from the elements. In 1941, she was working as a state nurse when her mother passed away. She received her mother's estate as her brother had passed away in 1937. Her private hospital was likely continuing to operate. In 1945, she passed away. And despite working as a nurse for her entire life, the probate listed her occupation as spinster instead of retired nurse. She brought many children into the world. She did not need to have children to significantly have contributed to the Trelgwen community who loved her. Isabella died 10 years before the building of the historical Trelgwen Public Hospital on Prince's Highway, where the current CFA is. In episode 10, a ghost story is told of this area. So look out for that. There are many stories to share about the Trelgwen history. There were so many people written about this vibrant, busy community. Part 2 of Trelgwen's history is on Patreon. Patreon.com/Haunted Hills. There is a story about a father-daughter accountancy team, another nurse, a doctor with a truly tragic story, many soldiers from the Trelgwen area, Trelgwen's vet and first car dealer. If you still have a craving for more of these spirited small town characters, check out Patreon. Thank you for your time, I truly appreciate it. I hope you've enjoyed hearing about a different time and the people who lived then. Tegan Dawson produced, researched, wrote and narrated this episode on Gunai Kurnai land in Maui, Victoria. Never ceded. Haunted Hills theme song is by Aaron Austin Music. Next time on Haunted Hills, we'll be telling the real crime story of Trelgwen. This small town has big stories. Let me know if you like this podcast. Let someone you know. For more small towns, big stories on the socials, Facebook, Haunted Hills Pod, Twitter, @haunt_hills, or our pod website, Haunted Hills or hauntedhillstours.com.au. And there are plenty more episodes on Patreon, which are ad-free and released early to patrons. Thank you for listening. Hope you have a great time. Be kind, thoughtful, stay safe and healthy. There is a bushranger who says he comes from a good family, that he was a gentleman and never harmed a woman. Well, he held them up at gunpoint, took their possessions, but only things you could see. He was educated with horses. What does it take to be a gentlemanly bushranger? This episode on patreon.com/hauntedhills explores this. We'd love to hear your opinions. Which bushranger do you think was most likely to earn the moniker gentlemanly? Do you think it stands the test of time?